I'm sure you both have watched this YouTube channel. It is titled Renegade Cut. Have either of you watched Renegade Cut videos? Because I watched one. He was talking about the controversy around the breast reduction size of the Tifa character from the Final Fantasy VII remake, right? And he goes into how, like, hey, guess what, guys? There's never going to be less or fewer boobs in the world. So this isn't about breasts. This is about believing that being in the position to constantly objectify women is what is supposed to be the standard. And that if you deviate from that, you're breaking the correct alignment of the universe.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, coming back from the place of, well, you think that this is the correct alignment of the universe because it puts you at the top and it works for you, but it doesn't work for anybody else.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. It's the divine right of kings.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a direct chain from God to me. It makes sense. Yes, you're in the fields toiling, but I'm sorry. I didn't decide this. It's just,
I mean, I was born in the castle. I don't know what to tell you. If you were born in the castle, you could be me.
And also, Tifa's breasts are disproportionately huge. Still.
Yeah. Still.
They're maybe too big.
If they're in a video game, they're almost certainly too big. Right? Like, or they are above average.
Yeah.
There's not really any sort of normal female bodies in video games.
I've been going on this rant. I've been trying to write something about it. I play a lot of fighting games.
Like Dead or Alive with the volleyball games and everything they had. I remember all that stuff, which
And watching one of my favorite fighting game characters just gradually evolve into this like body horror monster. That's like, they just announced her as DLC in the latest game. And it's like, because it's gotten grotesque.
Game is it?
Guilty Gear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which character? I just want to see how insane this is.
Baiken, B-A-I-K-E-N. It's a lot. they've gotten outrageous, those girls have. But it's like a cycle. It's a process. Like you can rattle off like five or six different franchises.
Look on your face.
Did you find it?
She's like a bathrobe samurai that is just
hanging out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you're like literally the idea here is not really to cover my lower half or my upper half.
No.
It's just like it's as if instead of a boob window, it's like a boob atrium.
Yeah,
like a boob patio. Yeah.
A courtyard.
Yeah. Boob French doors.
Just a little bit of pergola.
Keep it, keep the rating down.
Which, and this is the thing that always bothers me, is like, I don't understand why it's not a more common topic of discussion. People will say like, well, sex sells, so that's why it happens. And it's like, but people buy what they're presented. Like, teen boys, yes, obviously, like teen boys are going to be interested in breasts because guess what? Sure. Hormones are happening. But you don't have to present them with absurdity.
No,
to get their attention. Like,
no,
you could literally probably just present them with very modest female characters and they would have the same response.
They don't need a lot to sexualize, a character. It's just
riding
like
school bus is sexualized when you were a teenager, like the vibrations of tires on the road.
Look, décolletage. It wouldn't be hard.
No.
And yeah, this ludicrous shit where it's like, it really does feel like it's catering to just an audience of like entitled anime nerds.
Yeah, it's a specific narrow group of people who are very vocal.
Right. But people like me who I've played all of these games. It's like, I'm sorry. No. And because I'm at the age where it's like, I don't want to spend my money on that.
Right. Well, and because at some point it becomes kind of like embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because I have Street Fighter V, and like several of the female characters in that game, like I like their fighting styles, but I feel like
don't want to play them.
I feel conflicted about it because it's like this is, I feel myself gazing here and I don't want to have like feelings about pixels. Right. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you know,
well, when they streamed the Street Fighter V finals a couple years ago on ESPN, they had to force one of the players to choose the secondary outfit for one of the characters because it wouldn't meet broadcasting standards. It was too lewd. Like the default costume for Armika was too much for basic cable. And it's just like, you know,
that's a problem.
That's so gross.
That's a problem.
And it's like, well, why are there any women in the FGC? I wonder why.
I wonder, you know,
and they say some shit like, oh, they're, you know, someday fighting games are going to be in the Olympics. It's not if it looks like this. This is embarrassing.
Well, like, and there's so many ways to just to fix it with alternate costumes, with just pro, like, do character models that, I don't know, like, if you want to include that content, maybe that content needs to be like paid DLC.
Sure.
That is something that you got to go out and seek rather than being the default thing. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think the last time that you both were on the podcast, which we will start, but I'm going to keep a lot of this conversation because it's fucking great. we will actually start the podcast soon. But when we were talking about like horror video games, I think, and we talked about Lollipop Chainsaw, which is a game that is entirely predicated on that. Now,
absolutely,
it is trying to be self-aware in its very like late 90s, early 2000s way, where it's saying like, well, yeah, she's like a hot cheerleader in a bikini, but she's the badass who's killing everyone in this video game. Therefore, juxtaposition. Yeah,
exactly.
But like, these fighting games aren't doing that. Like, they're not like, you know, since the point of really like Cammy in Street Fighter 2, it's just been like, how can the ante be upped?
Right.
Yeah.
To the point where, I mean, now granted, like Street Fighter V is generally just so exaggerated that, you know, Chun-Li's thighs are like three times larger than her head.
Yeah.
And then her breasts are like two times larger than her head.
Yeah.
And it's all so almost, it would almost be Rubenesque if it were intended to be an artistic depiction of something, but it's not Beauty and Repose. It's like
and she's not a large woman, you know.
No.
Like, she's got the thighs and the bust of a you know, a Rubenesque model, but she is a svelte athletic woman with just these monster proportions and just the strain. The cycle of exaggeration of just teasing out, like, you know, I always think of Mai Shiranui of King of Fighters and Fatal Fury, where it's like you look at the first iteration of that character and the last one, and it's just like, what are we doing here? You know, and we're selling vinyl models to lonely perverts. Is that actually what we're doing? But it just chases away any, you know, you don't have to be lurid to be sexy, you know. It's no one is objecting to the idea of like a character being appealing. It's just, you know, what's being brought up here is like, this is an issue of taste, you know, and particularly bad taste.
Well, it's an issue of like, it's bad writing to an extent, because like every video game there should be a reason why this is happening. Because there are certainly reasons why, teenage boy, you don't walk down the street and see the types of women you see in video games just walking to the grocery store in their two-piece like G-string bikini with boxing gloves on. Like, no one does that because it doesn't make any functional sense.
No.
And that, and I think that's like for fighting games, it would make more sense to me if it was like, well, yes, there's an advantage to the mobility with this costume, which is why kind of the cami leotard thing makes some sense.
To a point.
Sort of. Sure. Not, yeah. You know, but like, yeah. But beyond that, give us a reason why. Like, tell us why this is this way and why it has to be, because...
Yeah. Why are you fighting in a bathrobe?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you can't possibly be surprised. There's only one level with your bathroom in it, and we're not there right now. So you got dressed, right. Chose to get back into your bathrobe.
Like, exactly.
You had to Uber to the fight.
Yeah.
Ubered in your robe?
Right.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they do go to lengths with characters like Zangief, where it's like, no, I'm going to flex out of my shirt. But you don't just show up looking like Cammy, you know, like that's a weird, awkward plane ride. Like, and we watched it happen, you know?
Yeah.
who's sitting next to Cammy and
Coach? You Indiana Jones mapped. Somebody on Delta is just like... Yeah. Why do you have war paint on your bare thighs? What's happening?
Just her and the guy eating pancakes out of a Foot Locker bag.
Yeah, the woman next to her is just like, you you have major camel toe. I just want you to know before we land, before we get wherever you're going.
You're
going to want to adjust that. I will block the aisle for you so that you can stand and slowly get yourself back into position.
Yeah, just to adjust. Yeah. Yeah. I'll run interference for you.
Do you want to like,
where's her video game?
Well, seriously.
Literal wing woman.
Yeah. that's a great video game concept, just to be like, your job is to defend other women from the toxic men around her. This is your task.
Yes.
Though it's really only something that would be, it would be good to make boys understand. I think women would be like, I really don't, like, women would respond the way that
I did that all day. I don't need to come and play the game.
Yeah, women would respond the way people do to Red Dead Redemption 2, where it's like, you know, I would like to play this, but it's a lot of work and I already did it. Like, I spent the day walking around slowly, saying hi to people and taking a bath. I don't need to do this in my free time.
Need more errands.
Yeah. I already passed through the arduous gauntlet.
Yeah.
Felt like I died inside and then had to go back and do it all over again. Absolutely. So I don't need to do the corpse run of my day.
Yeah.
Soul's sister. That's what it should be called.
Yes. Yes.
Nice.
Which I will say, the Souls games do a good job of not objectifying their female characters.
Shockingly.
Like, even the ones that the internet waifus out, like, the internet does gross stuff to them, but they are never depicted in such a way that it's like, you're supposed to turn this into an object.
I'd say Guinevere is the only.
Well, yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah,
she's the only, but you're right. I mean, other than that, it's like, I mean, she's not wearing shoes. Is that supposed to be the thing? I don't understand.
Somebody called Quentin Tarantino.
Back around that, you don't need enormous tits hanging out of a bathroom.
People will do it anyway.
Yeah, just with your bare feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
See? Proving your point.
Grosso's gonna gross.
Exactly.
Creeper's gonna creep.
Creeper's gonna creep.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is A Vague Idea. It's a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia, and each week we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week we're going to be talking about the games where you pretend to be someone you're not. No, I'm not talking about jobs. Jobs suck. I'm talking about RPGs, role-playing games. So we have two fantastic returning guests. You've been listening to them talk for nigh on 25, 30 minutes about very interesting things already. Our first returning guest is a comedian. He stands up and he tells jokes, and he recently told jokes at the fort in Fort Collins, and it's very funny. I watched it, Ryan. It was really good.
Yay.
You know, you're really funny, and I hope you just keep, you know, as COVID wanes here, I hope you just keep picking up opportunities, because you're gonna break through. I really think you will.
We'll see. I'm mostly just eager for the risk of disease to
Yeah.
Bottom out, because that's becoming very tiresome of like, oh, I got a great idea. I should go to the open mic. Oh yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, it's exhausting. It's exhausting to still be here. Like we're getting to the 2-year anniversary. We're like a month away. We're a month away from 2 years of this. Yeah. And it's everyone's fault.
Uh-huh.
Which is the saddest part. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And you know, we've been talking about this. It's so much easier when it was like, oh yeah, no one's doing anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Now it's like
there was no FOMO.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now it's you know, Milhouse getting homeschooled. You know, it's just all the kids are out there, you know, having fun, having a ball.
But Milhouse understands American Revolutionary history like no one else.
Very true.
Yeah, but he's still Milhouse. He's still Milhouse.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Point the world.
Well, Ryan Knoll is our first returning guest. Ryan, hello. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our second returning guest is his lovely, wonderful partner. She is a bookseller, a philosopher, a writer, a reader, and an all-around incredible human being.
Hello. Hi. Good evening.
Hello.
Good morning. I don't know when you're listening to this.
That's why I say all three things when I do the
show.
So you're listening to Elliot Zollern speak now. So Elliot, welcome back.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So we spent the last bit of time kind of talking about video game adjacent characters, and now we're going to talk about role-playing games, which come in video game forms as well as tabletop and other kinds of forms. So the opening question I have for each of you is just, what's your favorite RPG?
I mean, are we talking about video game or a TTRPG?
Anything, like whichever one you like the most.
Oh man, you go first.
Well, I'm kind of taking it back. I thought we were talking about rocket propelled grenades. So I did a lot of, oh
no,
God.
Oh no. Oh, Jesus. Oh, dear.
Just really love that, that Boeing, that Boeing Z10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how lazy I am. It's like, oh, I should look up some rocket propelled grenades for that gag. Nah. I'll make something up. No.
See, and I love that I hear RPG launcher, and I'm just picturing somebody with just like a D&D book and a slingshot. And, yeah.
I mean, at least Palestinian people would enjoy that.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. That would be a much better time than what's going on now.
I feel like I'm somewhere else. I forgot.
Roll for initiative.
Oh, shit.
I knew we would circle back to war crimes. I knew it.
Hey, you know what?
Every time with you guys.
Even when it was the mice, it was always the war crimes. I knew it was the war crimes.
I would say, just off the top, my favorite RPG, and this is definitely dating myself because I'm not sure this game is good. It probably isn't, but Xenogears for PlayStation 1 was sort of like peak 90s Japanese RPG for me, in that it was just this runaway train of like nearly psychotic gobbledygook of like, it was every trope of like the big grand Japanese RPG thrown together in a pot and shaken up and like told to you by like a coked out weirdo at a party at, you know, way too late at night. That's what it felt like. It was just this blast of like, no, there's just fucking robots and past lives and God is the devil, but he's also an alien who created people to eat. And also, but you are like a soul that's entwined with another soul. So you keep reincarnating to like, but you know, it's your alien love and philosophy, like fucking philosophy. Have you heard of Heidegger? And it's just like so much. And I don't know what the fuck that game wants to be doing, but it's just, it's
what it's doing. It.
It's doing it so hard.
Like a lot.
Yeah. It's the sports car with the pedal all the way down, just blasting at the cave wall. So it What is that metaphor? I don't know what that metaphor means,
know.
But
I really don't know what you're doing.
I mean, it's Plato's allegory of the cave, right?
Yeah.
You get in a sports car and you drive into the cave wall, and that's why you're not paying attention to reality.
Yeah, yeah. And the guy comes and he's like, but you know, it's actually a conveyance that goes quickly. And they're like, whatever, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the Roadrunner shows up and he's like, no, I just painted the cave, hold on. It's a wall. I never played Xenogears, but I mean it is just insane, right? There's Jungian psychology.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Freudian stuff.
Uh-huh.
All sorts of weird religion, because that was the big thing, like in that late era 90s Square, where it was just like, hey, look, people will buy anything that we put out because we're Squaresoft and everybody fucking loves our stuff, so we just load it with whatever you want.
And I think there was a level of, you know, the foreign as the exotic in a lot of 90s Japanese media. So a lot of it is tinged with, like, you know, elements of Christianity and depictions of churches and very kind of Euro, Eurocentric worlds. But there's always that subversion of like, yeah, God is eating us. And I don't know. I don't know what that's processing in the Japanese consciousness, but in the American one, it was just like, whoa.
Maybe it's just the Japanese kind of saying, like, all of this Western excess though is total bullshit and it will destroy itself.
I mean, it could be a commentary on Christianity itself. It could, I don't know, but I'm always amused that, like, one of my favorite characters in Samurai Showdown is Amakusa, who was an actual Christian martyr back in the day, and how they've reinterpreted that back in the 1600s, how they've reinterpreted that is like, he's an evil wizard trying to take over the earth.
He's like, basically Merlin, right? Like, it's almost the same.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, Japanese Merlin is, he's Abe no Seme, who was this court sorcerer back in the 12th century. So he's always playing the Merlin role, but like, you know, Amakusa is like, oh, he's fucking terrible news. He's here to corrupt us and kill us all. And it's like, all right, that's a strong stance. That's a pretty bold reinterpretation of all that. But I don't know. I'm here to call out the nation of Japan.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's just basically Garfield without Garfield, right? It's like, you've got the interpretative text of what this is.
Right.
And we're just going to take one key element away. Mm-hmm. And then this is now about John's descent into badness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I don't want to, like, you know, minimize like a lot of the artistry that went into those games, because they were tapping into something, you know, there was a zeitgeist. That I think that's what people are so nostalgic about.
Oh, hell yeah.
They think about, like, oh, the old Final Fantasy games and stuff like that. It's or Chrono Trigger, for God's sakes. It's very much, I don't know, that this weird melange of cynicism and whimsy that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lofty sort of heroism mixed with the complete nihilistic understanding that none of the heroism matters.
Yeah.
Which allows you to completely suspend disbelief about everything, right? Like, you can fully enter a fantasy if there's no consequences and there's no meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, well, okay. I can definitely knock over this very elaborate set of dominoes without caring who set them up or caring who will set them up again, and just get the satisfaction of watching them fall. And that's kind of what those games are, right?
So true.
Well, and there's always that scene right towards the end, like just at the beginning of the third act, where they have the big rousing speech about friendship. And it's like, no, nothing matters, but we matter to each other.
We've got each other. We can do it.
It's like, yes, the power of friendship. Okay, yeah. I know where this is from.
And those same people are now writing speeches for pretty much everybody in the modern Democratic Party.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
We're not going to win.
Worst RPG ever.
If Biden's campaign song was like the theme to Chrono Trigger, he would probably do pretty well, actually.
Yeah, yes. I think you'd will he would yeah. do a lot better.
It's Absolutely. Rousing. It is rousing.
So, Elliot, what's your favorite?
Well, I mean, after all of that, and I'm just like, D&D.
Like, what's wrong with that? D&D's great. To say. Yeah.
How can I talk about the history of Japan? And pretty much any TTRPG that you play, sitting around a table with a bunch of actual human beings and some pencils and some dice is my favorite thing. I happen to think that like community storytelling is one of the coolest things as human beings that we can do. It's awesome. And if you haven't tried it, go find some friends and do it.
You can get a D&D Beyond account right now for free and a Roll20 account for free.
Yes, you can. Use those tools. Absolutely.
I agree with you completely because it is one of the, I'm so happy actually that, and granted, I like rediscovered it about a year and a half, 2 years before all of COVID happened. But to have that as an asset, to be able to play games over Zoom every once in a while with people and to reawaken the active sort of storytelling thing. Like I've written so many campaigns and just had fun with just creating an outline and then improvising with other people.
Yeah. And it never goes the way that you think it's going to go. I've been playing with the same people for a very, very long time. And you would think by now I'd be able to predict. No. And that's the magic of it, is you never know exactly what's going to happen. And everybody just sort of comes together and creates something completely new together. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's wholly collaborative, right? When the rest of the world, like all of our jobs, all of our relationships to some degree, whether they're family, whether they're romantic, whether they're friends, whatever, like all of those things have adversarial moments to them.
Yeah.
And yet for some reason, D&D is a place where, I mean, especially if you've got the right kind of dungeon master, game master person running the thing, it can be the most like everybody gets their way.
Yeah.
Feel like they got their way, even though they didn't. Like your character could die doing something spectacularly absurd that you that I allowed you to do on a dice roll, and neither of us will feel bad about that.
No, because you can still arbitrary. Win.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can still win if you got to do something cool and you got to feel good about it. And it's a story that you can talk about later.
It's called gambling, people. Go out and do it. MGM Sports app.
Oh no.
Oh man. That I will say that since we moved to Delaware, I no longer getting those commercials because it's not legal here.
Because
it was mind blowing. Like I was looking at J.B. Smoove and Jamie Foxx and fucking Patton Oswalt every other commercial break on everything I watched.
Yeah. Had I known, I would have voted against it. Had I known I was going to be subjected to this shit.
Yeah, I'm still for it in principle, but in practice,
absolutely, like, do what you want.
But does no one else want airtime? Like,
apparently not.
Well, yeah, and it's like, well, why aren't there weed commercials? Because at least break it up with weed commercials. Like, they're not allowed to advertise their destructive thing that's addictive and causes people to ruin their lives.
I think gambling has destroyed way more lives.
No, it absolutely has.
100%.
Well, let's hop into round number one.
Let's do it.
All right.
Elliot, I'm going to start with you. Do you have a vague idea about Disco Elysium?
Disco Elysium. Yeah, absolutely. That's when you get together and there's a lot of bright colored lights and, you know, maybe some Donna Summer coming up. I do know that it's a video game, but I'm going to have to throw this one to Ryan. I do know it's, is it Japanese?
I will say nothing. It's doing the point.
Oh, I don't think I get points for that.
You might be surprised.
I mean, hey, you are correct that it's a video game, so you're getting a point for
it
that.
It is a video game.
So, yeah.
I don't think it's about, you know, roller skating to Donna Summer, but it would be better if it was. I feel pretty confident saying that.
I wouldn't, I have not played this game yet, but I wouldn't put it past it to at some point have that as a component from everything I've heard.
Well, damn.
it's wild, yeah. So Ryan, what can you add?
It's a video game. It's the first game from a company called Zaum. Wow. From East.
Sorry, what was that again?
Zaum.
One more time.
Zaum.
All right, thank you.
You're building a soundboard over there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anytime I'm snooty and think I have dignity, you'll just be like, zaum, zaum, zaum.
You better believe it.
I think the guy who founded the studio was a former journalist or novelist, but he was a writer and formed this game studio. This is their first game. It's about this detective who goes on such an epic bender that he completely erases his mind in the middle of a murder case. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the whole thing is basically like building a traditional CRPG tabletop experience with no combat encounters. So like how you stat your character is all just like aspects of his personality and his intellect and what you can say and how you react and what information you glean is all based on like your intelligence, your strength, your spontaneity, your imagination, and like different aspects of your personality and your mind like talk to you like they're separate characters. Oh, and cool. So you're trying to piece together both who you are, what you were doing before you lost your mind, and who murdered the guy that you're there to investigate.
And, is it Donna Summer on roller skates?
I mean, I haven't beaten it yet, but there was a time when Donna Summer probably could have killed a couple people no one would have said much. She was the queen of disco.
Bad girl herself.
Yeah, what's interesting about this game too is that like the combat encounters that do exist are high stakes conversations.
Yeah
so like cool. you can die by dead ending a conversation with like a witness. Like you just cannot advance forward and that is game over. Like you have entered fail state for this and you have to try again.
How is that different from real life?
Well, exactly. I think that's what's kind of cool about it. Cause it's like, it would be really like way better than LA Noir, right? Where it's like, you almost can never reach a fail state on this.
It tried hard.
You have to.
It's not a bad game, but.
No.
It was trying something different.
It was.
Give it that. But like investigating in video games has always been kind of bad.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
I feel like we're groping our way through it towards something more compelling, but it's also tough in that like we're in this era where the YouTube playthrough and the game fac is so readily available that one of the big sort of landmark investigation games of the last couple of years, The Outer Wilds, that game could be beaten in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just you have to know how.
Yeah.
And the game, playing the game, is just investigating how.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's there. I don't know. It's a tricky tightrope.
It's about the journey, not the destination.
But so are investigations, you know? Sure.
Well, observation as a human skill is not something everyone has in equal amounts, nor is it something that's like fun for everyone, right? Like rooms are kind of the closest thing to an actual investigation, where if you have to figure out even where to begin somewhere and you cannot, you would hate a video game that was like, oh, this is a VR experience where instead of a crime scene where when you walk near the thing, it goes, bugum. And you go, think I found a clue. Is the flickering object that's pulsing and making a noise what I'm supposed to investigate? Just had a VR thing where all you could do is look around a room, a la like Silent Hill The Room, and nothing changed, and you just had to like, well, maybe one of the books on this shelf has something interesting, and 9 hours later you have looked through.
That weird balance between like too obtuse and not obtuse enough, because like there's a disadvantage of like a video game. It should be, you think, the world's your oyster, but you have to build every contingency, you have to create every variable and every path for every variable.
Mm-hmm. And that's impossible with video games. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just only so much programming that you can do. You can't program mm-hmm. for every eventuality and program 100 different endings and have them all be quality unless you want your game to only be 2 hours long.
Right.
And even then.
Even then. And okay, you only have a limited number of variables. How do you make that compelling?
Exactly.
And yeah, so we've been wrestling with these questions for a long time.
We have.
Because you can't even really replicate it in real life. It's not like you could ask your friend to commit a crime and then you go investigate it because
that's absurd. Next question, please.
Yeah, great job. Ryan, 2 points. Elliot, 1 point.
Hey,
round number two, Ryan, do you have a vague idea about Yakuza?
I do. So Yakuza is a action RPG series. Now, I think that was just an RPG series by, what is it, Ryu Gato something studio at Sega, where for the first six games, you play as, what's his name? Kyozu something?
You're really close. It's gone. You're really close.
I know. It's 2K. Kiryu. That's it. Mm-hmm. Kiryu Kazuma?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good. Very good.
On his rise to prominence as the Dragon of Mishima. And they're all sort of like these high operatic crime dramas with a dappling of supremely weird, very Japanese kind of cultural tourism. You know, they all take place in the same like three blocks of Tokyo. It's supposed to be modeled after, what is it, the red light district. I forget what it's called. But it's always a very small map. And instead of doing the, you know, sort of GTA thing where they build out at this huge fucking world sprawling, they have a small world that just kind of gets deeper and deeper and deeper and more interconnected. And you would come away thinking that Japan is an incredibly violent place because every couple steps, there's somebody wanting to punch you in the face. And it's like, guy, I am just trying to walk to the coffee shop and... but there's six of them, and now there's a seventh with a different guy. I haven't played that one. And the dude who made those games just left Sega, which was a big thing, and made waves. But they're kind of crime dramas, I would say.
Yeah, very good, very good. Mm-hmm. Elliot, anything to add about Yakuza?
Oh man, what would I even add to that? That one also has all of the cool tattoo stuff in it, doesn't it? So you can look at all of the different tattoos, but you can't actually see it while you're playing because people are actually wearing clothes because of course you are.
Because you're men.
They do this amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know when the boss fights are getting intense when you're fighting one of the other Yakuza guys and you both like toreador your clothes off
so you can see.
They all have this one motion where it's like they might be wearing a jacket and a dress shirt, and then in one motion they'll grip their shoulder and just go.
Everybody has tearaway suits.
In the Yakuza, so that you can show your ink, right? That's how that works.
If I had the rad ass henna tattoo all over my back, I'd be pretty eager to be like, look, fellas.
Look, bro.
I earned this with my years of service.
But yeah, I feel like other than that being, which I think is the coolest part of it, you pretty much covered it. Were we talking about objectification in video games earlier? Can I not have this?
I will say that's a series that is very disinterested in women.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't... don't think in a progressive way.
It's just like they're not involved in the crime, ladder that I need to climb to accomplish my life, nor do they run the strip club that I can become the master of as a side game, or the laundromat, or the coffee shop, or the noodle bar. Like,
Yeah.
What so I love
just let
about
me have this one thing, just heavily tattooed men just tearing their shirts off. That's really, that's really the most important part of the game.
And having very stress this earnest, tearful conversations with each other.
Deep feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, because there is the game, because of the like operatic, like soap operatic style of it. Mm-hmm. There is hyper violence with like mm-hmm. just pummeling someone in the face with baseball bats that seem to come out of nowhere. And then, yeah. and then really hugging it out and being all about honor and everything.
Yeah,
but absolutely. I love that like this and like the Persona games have this interesting fixation on a small, very intricate area that you live in, that you, you interact with very small maps that just get more and more dense with things you can do.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
they have stuff in them that like, they're only there to provide you with a level of caring and
mm-hmm.
yeah,
and welcomeness to the setting to make you almost forget it's a video game. So yeah. that you could legit play Yakuza for days and not do anything in the quest that was criminal. Like mm-hmm. you could just go do like delivering pizzas or some mm-hmm. nonsense. Like you could mm-hmm. do nothing stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really lovely.
Yeah,
yeah,
I agree. Yeah, there's something about like
inhabiting space.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, and I don't know if that's like imported from MMOs gradually, where it's like almost like a subgenre of RPG that's like chores, you know, like do your fake chores,
do your chores,
you know.
Yeah.
But I agree. I do like these sort of dense interlocking systems that enrich a tiny space and make it feel lived in, rather than like here is a massive 35-mile dollhouse that you affect in no way, and you can drive around and do crime, but
sure,
you know, you're not really going to have an impact on it in any significant way.
Right.
Or even to have just overly intricate mechanics, while having them operate in a space that is indifferent to your presence. Like,
yeah, it really does speak to, I feel like, the difference in Japanese game development and Western game development mm-hmm. is like in Japanese game development, there always seems to be like a primary focus on this is a game and these are the rules.
Yeah.
Whereas like, I feel like a lot of Western development is about like simulating how you think it would feel. Mechanically, that can be really awkward to integrate. Like, oh shit, we still need to make this, you know, a game.
Right.
Whereas like, I feel like we just start in different directions.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that's very accurate. Yeah.
Well, great job. I am going to give Ryan 2 points. And I'm going to give Elliot 2 points because you did call back to that sexualization.
Absolutely.
It's important to talk about.
I'm happy to do that for you.
We're going to play our first game now. We're going to play I See What You Did There. So, Ryan, I'm going to start with you with number one. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could make Debbie Harry the protagonist of a sequel to this weird Disney Square RPG and name it after one of her band's hit songs.
Kingdom Heart of Glass?
You are correct. Very good. Kingdom Heart of Glass. See what I did there?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
All right. Elliot, number two. What if Bethesda found 981 Hebrew texts in 1947 and included them in their already popular sword and sorcery RPG series?
Oh, no.
If you can think of the RPG series.
Skyrim?
I mean, it is Skyrim, but Skyrim is an entry in what
series? The Elder Scrolls.
Great. Yeah. So what Hebrew texts might have been discovered in 1947, of which there were 981?
The Dead Elder Sea Scrolls?
Yeah, I was going for Elder Dead Sea Scrolls, yeah.
Very good. I see what you did there that I totally failed at.
You see what I did there? You see what I did there? You got there all on your own. The listener has no idea what was going on in the background. Number three, Ryan. What happens if Jack London's Wolfy classic novel swallows a Nintendo Legacy RPG's most recent entry?
Oh, fuck. Oh, God. Oh, no.
Oh, man.
I'm blanking on Jack London.
He'd be very upset. He was notoriously grumpy.
That part I've got.
You do got.
I do got.
To build a Fire Emblem 3? or to build a Fire Emblem three houses?
That's, I mean, that's a really good guess. I'm not going to give you a point. I think Elliot knows where we're going.
Wait, Call of the Breath of the Wild.
There you go.
Call of the Breath of the Wild is correct. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Oh, man.
It's even got Harrison Ford acting against a pixelated dog.
Oh, no. You know,
I would go see that movie if they took the dog CG out and just had the guy in the onesie.
Yeah.
I'd 100% watch
it. You know Harrison what? Ford. I would too.
Yeah. Because yeah. that would just
I
be
would a, watch that. You're
a
right.
fascinating social experiment.
It would.
Unfolding in front of your eyes.
It really would.
Just it's to watch just him act balls. Like he cares about this other human being
yeah.
who is demeaning themselves next yeah. to yeah. Harrison Ford.
100%.
Yeah. No, 100%. I would definitely watch that.
And you will. Also agree once you see that like Harrison Ford is the greatest living actor of our generation and any other really because that's a lot. It's a big yeah, ask.
I'm not arguing.
I think it would be funny if it was if the inverse occurred with that old like vacuum commercial where they made Gene Kelly dance with like a Hoover. Do you remember that? And there was a huge yeah. controversy that they were like, well, Gene Kelly's dead. Or it was Fred Astaire, maybe. I can't
yeah,
remember.
Yeah.
It was probably Fred Astaire. And they were like, well, he's dead. And this is rude to make him a product shill. Yeah, I think right. it would be funny if it was Fred Astaire dancing with a person who was pretending to be a vacuum for the purpose of the commercial. See that?
I would watch that too.
See, yeah. I would rather buy one of his old movies and then edit everyone out and add in vacuum cleaners.
Ooh.
And just have it be
okay,
like
a dancing vacuum
2-hour musical with no characters, just this constant whir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just
I
the
feel
faint
like
barking
somebody
of
has
dogs
made that
in
and won something at a film festival.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, definitely.
I
mean, hey, it's got to be better than the schlock Hollywood's putting out these days. Am I right?
Yeah, these days.
Ooh.
Corporate art.
All right. Number four. Elliot, mash this popular post-nuclear war RPG series with a late 90s Soderbergh-directed Clooney and Lopez crime film.
I mean, it's got to be, oh no. I mean, it's Fallout.
It is Fallout. The pantomime going on.
I don't know directors yeah. now. I'm just like, what the hell did Soderbergh direct?
In this film, so George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez are locked in the trunk of a car at one point. It was one of the more iconic scenes. They also obviously like fall for each other in the zaniness that is crime.
Of course. Boy, no, I've got nothing. It's definitely Fallout.
I'm gonna give you a point for Fallout because that's. That's worth something. Ryan, can you put
What's
this together?
What's the movie?
It's Fall Out of Sight.
It is Fall Out of Sight.
No, you never saw. Oh man, that's really up your alley, John.
You guys should watch it. It's good.
Okay. It's a good movie. Yeah,
I remember really liking it. I mean, I don't know if it holds up, but
it's a little 90s, but not a lot 90s. It's edgy, but in that sort of like sexy, everyone's pretty smart Elmore Leonard way, where it's like. I like watching these people, you know, like each other.
Yeah,
I would check it out.
These people are putting stuff together.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind watching George
Nobody's
Clooney
dumb.
And J-Lo be cute together. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a really famous sex scene that was based on the one from Don't Look Now.
Shit, sign me up.
Don't look now.
Well, that was I See What You Did There. It's time for round number three. So, Elliot, we're gonna hop right back at you. Do you have vague idea about Pathfinder?
Do I have a vague idea about Pathfinder? Yeah. It came after D&D. It's kind of I don't want to say it's a D&D knockoff because that sounds like I'm giving Pathfinder shit, and I'm not. But yeah, it's a fantasy TTRPG, pencil and paper. Standard fantasy classes. You kind of pick your class. You pick your race. It's a good time. It's a good time. It's got, you know, all the good standards.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Spellcasters, fighters, all of the goodies. lots of supplements, lots of expensive supplements. You play it with all the standard seven dice, polyhedrals, a clatterin.
You know what? I like that phrase because it's fun and accurate, but it also sounds vaguely sexual.
Like all good TTRPG stuff.
Yeah. Saturday night. Are your polyhedrals a clattering?
The goblins a smattering.
Yeah. Yeah, it's based off of a different system architecture than D&D, but it has the same bones, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Right on. Ryan, anything to add about Pathfinder?
No, it always struck me as being kind of like the Betamax of D&D, where it's like the people who preferred it were just, oh, there's more lines of resolution, you know? But most people were like, no, the other one's better. I couldn't tell you why it was or how it was different, like systemically or mathematically.
Hey, you're cooler at lower levels of Pathfinder, I would say, than in D&D, is one of the things that people do like about it.
Oh, so you kind of get into the action faster?
You do. Mm. But it just kind of depends on what kind of crunchy you prefer.
I think it's also easier to die in Pathfinder, though. I have died every time I've played Pathfinder.
That makes sense, though, because if you're cooler at lower levels, that means you're rerolling characters a whole bunch.
That's true.
Interesting. That's true.
Yeah, it's a game that is basically like, I would love to fantasize that there was at one point a person named Martin Pathfinder who went to the Church of Role Playing and hammered his decree on the door, because there was a great schism between it was between D&D like 3.5 and 4 and 4th edition.
Yeah.
And because like 3.5 has the grid system, has the very specific rules around targeting and move actions and how many things you can do and what, you know, and they tried to make D&D 4 a little more accessible to all players and a little less rule heavy. Yeah. And a bunch of people were like, well, fuck that, because the whole point is that this is hard and it's supposed to be math and I should be doing trigonometry to play this game.
Yeah.
Because what else is that 5 years of college good for?
Yeah. It's very true.
So it's built on this sort of interesting, just diverting path, but it plays the same with good people playing it, I think. It's just a matter of like how hard and fast the rules do you want to be? I know that it gets very difficult just from some of the podcasts I listen to that where they play Pathfinder exclusively, like when you get to late level characters, like if you're playing a level 17 character, the ways that all of your everything works is so arcane and
it is
convoluted that it's almost impossible to figure out, well, if I cast this spell, does it do what it says it does in the words, or do I need to read 15 erratas that have been published that explain how? No, because you're standing within three squares adjacent to a wall, it doesn't do the thing that it says it does.
That's extremely accurate and why I do not prefer Pathfinder. But I know people do, there are a lot of people who do like that. There are a lot of people who are crunchier gamers than I am, and that's totally cool if that's what your group likes, as long as everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, the beautiful thing about role-playing games is it's all collaborative. So if you have the right DM who gets it, you can use any system and have a fun time. Mm-hmm. It's less about, I always feel like it's less about I have to stick to the rules, and it's more about what will keep this going and being fun, even if it means, hey, I'm going to sacrifice this character this enemy that I built that I wanted to be really dangerous, but they've come up with something really clever that is not in the rule book, and this is a real Air Bud scenario, and I'm going to let that dog play basketball.
Absolutely. It's the rule of cool. My favorite rule of RPGs is always going to be the rule of cool. And if the players pull out something that's super cool and come up with a creative answer and solution, then it works. Magic. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Well, it's like I guess people will feel differently about it depending on, you know, how much of a stickler they are, what they like about RPGs. But it seems like if it's an engine for storytelling,
some systems are more than others.
So. Right. Yeah. Right. Because some are more like a system for war gaming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you're just there to set up a really elaborate map and put all your beautifully painted models on it, and then spend 2 hours deciding that you can all move 3 squares each toward each other, and then going, okay, cool, we have to go get, you know, High C and Fluffernutters now because I'm gonna go into a diabetic coma if we don't. Right. There are games for you, but if you just want to spend 2 hours bullshitting and saying like, well, yeah, we killed that goblin because I was able to knock that tree over and it fell on it. And that's how we get into the castle instead of solving the riddle that you came up with or whatever. Absolutely. Like,
well, absolutely. It's a very specific flavor of game and person in which the phrase "quoth the errata" is ever uttered. You know?
So true. So true.
Well, great job. I'm going to give Elliot 3 points and Ryan 2 points.
Nice.
So round number four, Ryan. You have a vague idea about Hunt a Killer.
yeah, it was a show that aired on CBS for a long time, where what's his name? Chris something would arrange for people to like be ambushed at this house, and he'd be like, "Would you like to see? Would you like to sit down?" And they'd be like, "Oh, where's, you know, my murder victim? I'm I have no fucking clue."
I really do like the idea that To Catch a Predator would be actual murderers and not just like creepy 19-year-olds trying to have a date with the 14-year-old that they met on the internet.
It'd be a much more interesting show, especially if it's hosted by a different person every time, because of course they kill him. New host every episode. Oh shit, how did we not see this coming?
It's just a show where he's sitting at the kitchen island, and John Wayne Gacy walks in clown makeup, and he's like, "Well, where's the kids' party?" And he's like, "Take a seat.
why don't you sit down? What do you have in the backpack? Knives? More knives? Wow,
that's a lot of knives. Don't come near me. Oh, okay. Oh, well, I guess I'm not the host anymore. Save me a nice hole under your porch. great. Elliot, anything to add about Hunt a Killer?
Oh man, it's my time to shine, but I like his answer so much that I just kind of want to stick with it.
No, go for it. You shine.
No, Hunt a Killer, isn't that, I have not played Hunt a Killer, but isn't that a collaborative, a mystery game, like a dinner party mystery game?
Yeah, it's like a collaborative, like subscription episodic mystery game. So you get a box of clues and weird artifacts.
Yeah, they send it to you in the mail, and then but you do it with other people, don't you? Or can you do it by yourself too, though?
I think you probably could, but it wouldn't be as fun. I don't know.
Like they send you a bunch of stuff, and then you get, I think depending on how often you sign up for, you get a certain number of boxes and clues and a different mystery. I think like if you do like a shorter run, then it's a different mystery than if you do a longer run. But yeah, you get to play detective in your own house at your dining room table.
It's just one of those things where they'll set up like fake websites and cool.
Okay. Yeah. So the co-working space that I used to be at when I was in Denver, like he had a subscription to that. Mm-hmm. And there were just like, you'd basically get like a weird manila envelope that had like a flash drive in it, right? And you put the flash drive in the computer and it has audio files. And they're garbled recordings of these like psych sessions that this one person was logging, but you don't have any evidence that that person did anything wrong. You're trying to actually like piece any of it together. We didn't get very far.
Don't they send you physical media too?
Yeah. It's like you get like newspaper clippings and all sorts of things that really, you know. And you can go as far as to like go through the newspaper and try circling all the first letters of the sentences, right? And seeing like, oh, there's a clue there. Or, you know, or it'll be something simple, like a phone number will be written in the margin of the newspaper and you call that phone number and you hear a message. It's really a cool thing.
It's one of those things that really blurs the line between RPG and LARP. Yeah, I feel like because you are actually, you personally are entering into the game and are engaging in solving the mystery. So it, I mean, LARP is almost like a dirty word these days. Oh God, LARPers. But really all that means, LARP is just live action role playing, and you are actually solving the mystery. You are actually going through it. That's what a LARP is.
Yeah. You don't have to throw a bag of rice at somebody and say fireball to LARP. That's not the requirement.
Exactly. Exactly. Over the pandemic, actually, a lot of online LARPs kind of took off, which is kind of cool. And you can like, they invented all sorts of things because so many people were like really hungry for role playing and they missed their groups. Things where you could like call in and do like a one-on-one LARP session with people over the phones. And there was one where you could call in and it sounded like you would sign up and then somebody would call you and they'd be like, help, I need to escape. And you have to try and help them figure out how to escape this room. And they're sending you maps and all sorts of cool stuff like that kind of. Yeah. Blossomed over COVID. It's very cool. And I'm pretty sure Hunt a Killer like boomed during COVID. That's kind
of I think it was like ramping up right before, and it just happened. Like, I hope that they just did really well, because it is such a cool thing. And I think like I will try ordering it for us to try sometime, because we've been doing a lot of puzzles lately, and it would be interesting to do. Like, it's basically just a different kind of puzzle.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and it's the sort of thing that, like, it's why people like watching murder mystery shows.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I like to...
But
I
you
like
get to solve it yourself you do. At the end, instead of, like, a detective coming out and doing it.
Right. Instead of the police solving only about 20% of them ever.
And that's the thing that I wonder, is that, like, are ARGs actually put together by grieving families who were told by the police, like, I'm sorry, it's a cold case. And they're like, we'll see about that. And they just gamified it.
We took the kid on the milk carton.
Somebody out there make that happen. Exactly. Start putting cold cases out there. Ship them out to people. We're bored. We will solve it.
The person solves the case. And they're just like, that was a fun game. And they're just like,
you found my daughter.
Yeah. Game.
Well, and it's good, because like one of the big complaints that kind of people talk about with the rise of true crime podcasting and true crime media is that so many people on the internet are actively judging other people, thinking that you must be committing a crime because you look weird in this video you posted to TikTok. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. If it stays a game, if it's like, well, this is a Hunt a Killer mystery and you just so happen to solve it, and it turns out that you solving it is a real clue, but they don't tell you until after you did it.
And
then they'll be like, hey, look, we only had like a couple cold cases in there, and you got one of the months that we did.
Yeah.
And good for you. But the rest of these are all made up. You would have people totally kind of fading in and out of being practically terrified about reality.
That
would be neat.
Somebody make this happen. Somebody out there.
There
you go. Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. We're somebody.
Oh.
Nah, we don't have any money. We can't do stuff.
That sounds like work.
Well, great job. I'm going to give Elliot 2 points and Ryan 1 point.
Hey.
And now it's time to play our second game. We're going to play Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Oh. I'm not familiar with this game. Is this a common parlance?
poor sheltered Ryan doesn't know.
So your options for Fuck, Marry, Kill are 3 RPG characters. You have Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII. You have Commander Shepard from the Mass Effect series, in whatever configuration you want. And you have any Dungeons and Dragons bard. Who will you fuck? Who will you marry? And who will you kill?
This is so easy.
Go for it.
This is so easy. Cloud Strife is definitely a fuck boy, so you definitely fuck him. I mean, look at the sword on that boy alone. Also, he doesn't seem terribly bright. Yeah, just absolutely. You know, he's terse. He won't say anything. He won't talk to you. So you just, you know, you fuck him, and you leave in the morning, and he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. You marry Shepard. You know, doesn't matter how you configure Shepard. Yeah. Shepard's a winner. Shepard's there for you. And then you kill every D&D bard, and I will. That's a threat. I am a dungeon master. I will. No, bards are actually great. They get a bad rap, but you know, if I have to pick, that's my pick.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Ryan, what do you think?
Well, we're in agreement. You gotta fuck Cloud.
Yeah, fuck Cloud.
You know, he'd be very awkward and hemmy at first, hemming and hawing, but like ultimately, yeah, he's a fuck boy. And when he yells Sephiroth at climax, it's like, I get it, you know. Yeah. I'm not here to judge you. It's
we fine. All say dad.
I get it. Exactly. Yeah, he's got a lot of inner torment that turns out to not be inner torment. I'm still loose on what actually happened in any of that game, but
everybody is. Mm-hmm. That's why we love it.
He's just basically David Bowie getting wrapped up in a communist resistance brief. And that's it.
David Bowie was way more together than Cloud. Yeah. Even at peak like cocaine late 70s Bowie, he was still like, yeah. Maybe he's more like Iggy Pop in that like all his good friends died and then he went on to I don't know how to finish that.
Yeah.
I need time to build that. But anyway.
We're workshopping. Yeah. This is right.
We're shopping. We're shopping.
It's fine. It's fine.
heavy editing hand on this episode.
But, it all stays in. It's all
gone. God. No. Oh God.
Oh no.
Jet fuel doesn't melt snow beams. we were all just having fun. And then all the 9/11 stuff came out. It was weird. here's where I part ways though.
Okay.
I would definitely kill Shepard.
Controversial.
They just kind of suck. And I get that they're the most important person in the galaxy and all that, but like, nah, Renegade Shep, what was it, Patreon? My brain's misfiring.
Dude.
I don't remember what
Patreon what Shep who you subscribe to for a small monthly fee and you get extra content.
And you get like, you know, $10 a month, and it's just like a bored video of them just like, I don't know. I'm fucking flying to this place that is just a bunch of chest high walls and
but if you marry Shep you get a spaceship
that gets blown up like every game. Yeah. I'm not how this goes. And
maybe with your guidance as a spouse it wouldn't blow up.
Yeah,
that sounds exhausting. That's just I don't need any of that. No, I would much rather be in like a torrid Tennessee Williams style marriage with a bard where it's just every night in a bar and you just have like your glass of whiskey and it's just like, I remember when you used to play me, and just, you know, throwing the glass across the room and that feels cool.
And then like, they throw it back at you with Bigby's hand.
You
would think the makeup sex after being dissonant whispered would be pretty intense.
Yeah.
Talks like thunder. What can I say? seems like a good arrangement. I don't know. Shep does nothing for me. Can't.
Okay. All right. I can respect that. As your spouse, I can respect that.
You're both absolutely correct. And you're both going to get 2 points. So good job. Yeah. Well done.
Stripe, like he fucked this country in 9/11. I saw it happen.
Holograms. No.
That wasn't a plane. That was a chocobo.
Oh, God.
I told you about my theory in football games. Whenever they point downfield, have I told you this?
No.
What I think quietly in my head every time, like they get, you know, the first down and they point to the end zone, I always imagine that they're like, that's the guy who did 9/11. And he's just like, huh? And like no one will listen because they all think it's just like a sports thing, and actually he keeps getting away every single game. Sometimes multiple times a game.
You're just dropping the ball indifferently. No, get that guy. And they're moving the chains. He's like, no, don't move the chains.
The guy.
And the refs are like, nope, you did a good job. Great job, son. And he's like, no, I'm there.
And just like, oh, you all are in on it. That's what this is.
That's why they do the two towers when they get a field.
Yeah.
It's all there, man.
Oh, no.
Check out my YouTube video. 3 sweaty hours of me in a pickup truck.
And now from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Francaise Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. So the question I have for both of you that is totally arbitrary, but not at all, because it actually still pertains to the topic. So I don't know why I call it this anymore. But the question I have is, what level and class do you think you are in real life?
I suffer from some debilitating self-esteem issues, so this is gonna get rough.
It's gonna get weird.
Do you have an
answer? Here, I'll make it weirder. Okay. Given what my previous answer was to the last question, I'm definitely a fucking bard.
Yeah, I know.
So that's unfortunate. Yeah, poet. Yeah, I'm definitely a bard. I do have some magic, but I can also smack stuff. So, you know, definitely a bard. And oh, I'm not very high level, but I'm still high level enough to do some cool stuff. So I'm going to say 8, level 8, not quite level 9 where you get that really sweet stuff, but damn it, I'm working hard towards it, you know, like I really want those 5th level spell slots and stuff, you know? Yeah, I buy it.
I think that's a great answer. Yeah, I think I'm also a bard. I was going to put myself somewhere around like level 5 or 6, because I feel like I do a lot of creative things, but I'm not focused at all. So sure. I'm like the worst kind of bard. I'm multiclassing and too much other shit.
Yeah. Just work over a decade in retail and you will level up faster. That's my secret. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, the word dilettante is French, so.
La Chose Francaise Arbitraire.
Exactly. We made it. We did it, everybody. Well, I don't know the levels terribly well, because I haven't played a lot of D&D, so I would guess I'm like a level 3 barbarian with a very low strength score.
Oh, man, that's so true.
Yeah. So
you're just like a high charisma barbarian.
Like the rage.
Yeah. I go into a berserker rage and everyone's just like, okay, you need to deal with something here. So that would, a very lopsided charisma and intelligence score and like no strength or endurance.
You made strength your dump stat and
And there's like, okay, what class am I? Oh no.
Oh no. Oh no, you're statted like a wizard. This lovely creature has very high int and very low whiz. Mm-hmm. I love you so much.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know anything. So so that the wizard thing is out, you know, because there are people whose knowledge has allowed them to manipulate the world around them for their gain. And I have not done that. So
I would disagree. I would definitely say you've multi-class. That's why you don't have those high level spells, man, is you just keep like multi-classing.
Sorry, I just get so angry.
I know, me too. Hulk smash.
Yeah, but that would be the other thing, is I could only trigger my berserker rage at inanimate objects.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Somebody has to conjure something for you to berserk upon.
It's true.
When the toilet paper roll, like you just put in a fresh roll and then it like, it clicks into place. You click it into place and then you put any kind of pressure on it and it pops right out. Oh, that motherfucker's getting all the dice.
Oh yeah.
Both barrels.
Because so many times it falls right into the toilet somehow too when it does that. And then you've just got this entirely soaked 40-pound wad of paper.
You can't flush it. You can't throw it away.
You have to fish that out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not going to let it dry out and try to use it. Like, it's ruined. Yeah. It's over.
Right.
Now you're battling an elemental.
It's some sort of toilet paper golem.
I do not want to see the town that that golem is summoned to protect.
Yeah, great job. I'm going to give you 2 points for that. I think that was very accurate and kind to yourselves as well, because,
Hey.
Could have been worse. You could have been like, I can't be a class. It's like, no, this is accurate. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
These are tropes. These are archetypes.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like bard, sorcerer, wizard, which is like I'm charmed by all of these sort of goofy intelligence, wisdom, and charisma things, but I haven't just focused on one for long enough, nor have I made any deals with any sort of church entity or whatever. So I don't actually have any power, but I sure as fuck can talk about the power a lot. Right. And every once in a while I can like make a spark come out of my fingertip.
Yeah. Exactly.
I get it. The casting of the mage light, where it's just like,
It was darker before.
Wasn't it?
It was.
All right. We're going into the final topic and exciting news. You are both tied with 14 points.
My God.
It's for real.
Down.
So it comes down to this. The fate of your relationship will be decided with this question.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
So, Elliot, you get first crack at this, too. That's what we're doing. Do you have a vague idea about GURPS? GURPS.
I sure do. The generic universal role-playing system.
I sure do.
God, we were talking about Crunchy earlier. My God. GURPS is a tabletop RPG. I can't wait to see what he comes up with to add to this. By the way, I'm just looking at him. He's like, oh, God. The beauty of GURPS is that you can theoretically build anything you want. So you can use it for any world to build any kind of character, and you can do all sorts of wacky stuff. Like you can have your cyberpunk character hanging out with your D&D ranger, hanging out with your superhero, hanging out with your chibi cat girl. And you can build all of that in GURPS and just mayhem, mayhem, mayhem. I would say the downside of GURPS is, my God, character creation will take you until you're in your 70s and you're old and you have arthritis and you're just like, why are there so many things on here? And yeah, it's a lot, but I absolutely adore the fact that there is a system that lets you build all of those things in conjunction to create just this giant clusterfuck of weirdness that you can make only pretty much with GURPS. Unless you write a homebrew system and use that. But GURPS is great. If you like Crunch.
I mean, it sounds like the opportunity to create an environment such as the Book of Boba Fett, which I don't know. Have you guys watched that?
I have.
But just a divine blend of like, there's British cyberpunks in this show now.
Absolutely, there are, for sure. You've got and some cowboys Western and stuff going on and all sorts of good stuff. And yeah, just put it all together in a blender. It's great. I love anything that allows you to just completely use your imagination and create something that's just bonkers.
Well, it's sort of like the RPGification of sort of a comic book universe, where these were all disparate ideas that had their own feel and their own vibe and their own tone, and they're all successful. Like, well, what if Doctor Strange met up with fucking Spider-Man?
And there was like a raccoon.
But the raccoon's from space.
The raccoon is from space.
So it's the peanut butter and chocolate.
It is.
You know,
with some cheese in it,
but not gross.
No, but a little gross.
But with potato chips, that's the thing they're doing now.
But also slightly.
Oh yeah, chocolate potato chips and peanut butter. Yeah, I fuck with that. I fuck with that for sure.
I can see that being good.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you got there?
Okay. Well, as none of your viewers know, I had my gallbladder out last year,
And ever since, I've had like real bad acid reflux.
It's a thing
that like, what, you know, sometimes it's a lack of acid in the stomach. Sometimes it's too much acid. But when your bile doesn't have that reservoir to drain into, it's just constantly going into your, encoding your stomach with this, you know, thick secretion of bile. And that causes GERPS.
GERPS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That is absolutely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Anything help the GURPS? Is it you just chugging Pepto or?
I tend more towards the Tums. Depends on, you know, the severity. The Pepcid. I was on the PPI for a long time, which is, you know, a character class that, you know, kind of a glass cannon. It gets results. It just also might give you cancer. So.
Not a great trade-off.
Not a great trade-off. The brittle bones, like my bones are already brittle. So you have to weigh. You can only use it for so long before, you know, you move on to the sunny shores of Tums.
If you picked him first, he would have just given me this panicked look.
Yeah. I think I would have faked an acronym.
What the hell? Is GURPS. Well,
for I recognize the name, but I would have gone with like a fake. I was over there for a long time. Like, genitals usually repose post sex.
I mean, they do though. You're not wrong. They usually do. It's called the refractory period, and we've all experienced it at one point or another.
Yeah. We've all been there. Except for people who play GURPS.
GURPS. Yeah, I think like GURPS is fascinating because it is so elaborate, and it is cool that you can mix all these things together.
Elaborate also, is a good word for it though.
Right. It's like what if we did everything? And by everything, I mean everything. Like like there's no stop to the thing we're doing, which is, I mean, and what, I mean, I don't even know, there's not any sort of video game comparison to that. There is no game. There's no game that has been like, what if just no parameters at all? There are games that have almost tried to boast that they were going to do that. But even like World of Warcraft, like, dials itself back eventually. Cause they're like, hey, wait, whoa.
It's like adding rule sets to basically anything you can imagine.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think the closest.
And that's their goal.
Right.
That is their goal.
Right. By definition, they will never succeed. But
right.
Or if they do, then that is the day that it all clicks for us and we all realize, oh no.
Oh no, we're all playing GURPS.
We've been GURPing this whole time.
We're just inside a marble and some aliens are playing GURPS with our galaxy.
If the publication of the guide to how to role play writing a GURPS book, and that is when the door closes and we're finally sealed inside of our own assholes.
But I mean, in there, probably no GURPS of the variety that you spoke of, Ryan. I mean, if you're inside the asshole, it's pretty safe.
Yeah.
Unless you have a terrible condition, things can happen, guys.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. But let's not.
Yeah, let's not. Yeah, I already said secretions too many times.
Hey, give us one.
Reach your quota.
Yeah, you can't see it, but there's a whiteboard right up to the side. It says Zalm, secretions.
Too much.
Jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams.
You're there.
Yep, we hit all of them. We got all of the keywords locked in for Google for this episode. Great job.
Well done.
I'm gonna give Elliot 3 points and Ryan 2 points.
I apologize for the constant. So then we have bile secretions.
No, you reached your quota.
Yep, I'm gonna have to edit that out. It's the only thing I'm cutting from the whole episode, but I'm cutting that.
I would beep it and then everyone's just like, what the fuck did you say?
What is going on? So this means that Elliot, you have won this week's episode with 17 points.
Unbelievable. 17 points.
Congratulations. You knew RPGs. You had a vague idea about them.
I do have a vague idea about RPGs. Hooray.
All the time.
I dumped too many of my stats into complaining about video game boobs.
You stack the deck in the before the game segment of the show.
Yeah.
So while you said some very thoughtful stuff.
Fighting games.
So Elliot, is there anything you'd like to plug that you want the listeners to know about, think about, buy, do, etc.?
Oh my gosh. I mean, yes, so many things. Support your indie bookstore. Wherever you are across this country, find an indie bookstore. Even if you don't have one in your town, find one in the town next to you. Support indies. They're so, so, so important. Yeah.
That's excellent. Yeah. Hell yes. Mm-hmm. We need people. You need to go into bookstores and buy shit.
Yes. Don't just go in and take a picture and then go home and order it on Amazon. Go talk to your local bookseller. Be nice to them. Buy some books.
Yeah. Damn right.
Damn right.
Damn right. All right. And Ryan, congratulations on scoring 16 points. It wasn't enough to win this week. But you know, you really you made a level 3 barbarians good go at it.
You did.
For the strength score that I have, pretty solid showing.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Well done. Well done.
If you motherfuckers were toilet paper rolls, I swear to God. You'd be sorry.
You'd tear us through us like toilet paper.
Not that 3-ply stuff. Not the nice stuff. No, I can't.
The 1-ply.
Yeah. The Scott paper tissues. That's better. Yep.
I love how this moment segues into a Twilight Zone episode where everyone does turn into wet toilet paper rolls, and it's a time enough at last thing where you're like, no, I have no one to prove my greatness to now. They're all toilet paper.
And the last person who turns, I'm just like, see, I can tear right through them. I can.
Oh no,
Charlie!
Charlie! No, there was time now.
Yeah, Ryan, anything you want to plug?
I stumbled across this great little website the other day. You know, I was shopping for books. But it has all sorts of stuff on there. It's like an entire online marketplace.
That will end our marriage. Unless you say Etsy next, like this is done.
No, I've got nothing to plug. If you're in the Northern Colorado area, come on down to the Comedy Fort. There's shows running Wednesday through Saturday, sometimes Sunday as well, every week, so long as you're not overly concerned with the global pandemic that's raging throughout America. But if that's not a thing for you, then hey,
come on,
fella, get out there.
Do it.
Hey,
laugh a little bit. Laugh before you die, huh?
Yeah.
And I suggest strongly that everybody check out, go to YouTube, search for January 13th, 2022, and you can find Ryan opening for Kyle Kinane and Ben Bryant at this very Comedy Fort.
Mm-hmm. The very club of which I speak. Yep. Yeah. But, get on it while you can, because that's only public until the festival season's over. And then it's going to the Disney Vault.
Yeah.
It's Song of the South and all the other classics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was frowned upon by several organizations. Let's just say that. It's, you know, I have a famous song in there, but that it's gravely outweighed by the problematic depictions of the antebellum South.
It's a damn delight.
Upside, too, even though they're going to put you in the vault, you're going to be on Rogan soon because.
Oh, God.
Jet fuel and
yeah, you know,
climate is everything.
I've come off as a despicable enough human being. I think I have something to say. Better be platformed by the largest podcast in the world.
Am I just awful enough to be broadcast around the world?
Maybe.
Well, time to post another sweaty truck video. That's
The sweatier, the better, baby.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what sells it. That forehead vein.
Oh, I got one of those.
Yeah.
When I get angry, that yeah. bad boy will come out.
Once that berserker rage starts
yeah.
going.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Hey.
Look at that tat. Oh, nice. My God.
They're all breakaways now.
Sick ink, bro.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, did I mention that I've got full body Yakuza tattoos?
Yeah, yeah, just you're just covered.
I know.
This is insane.
Yeah. I know. It's.
I mean, people would normally like stop around the armpits and the genitals, but you just went for it all.
Absolutely.
You know, I figured while you're down there, you know,
just go for it.
Just go down there. It's little sex skin isn't that thin.
Lovely.
Yeah. Final box gets checked on the whiteboard.
Thank you both so much for being on the show this week. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us. Great times.
Listeners, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out. You can also check out other podcasts that we have on the network, including Roll for Blank Streets of Mage, which is a actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast that I host. And there's still several more episodes before this story resolves. So you should cash in, jump in, enjoy it. People are goofy. They're rolling dice. You can hear the clatter of decahedrons. What did we say?
Polyhedrals.
Polyhedral clattering. Yeah.
A clattering.
A clattering.
Tink, 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 my friends.
Please tell me that's not your new.
Yeah, that's the new sign off. That's it. That's the show. It's over. No, if you so check that podcast out. If you want to read some science fiction books, I run a sci-fi press called Spaceboy Books, and you can find us at readspaceboy.com. We have a lot of excellent stuff out now. We got some more stuff coming this year, and I might even be releasing a book myself later in the year. So we will see about that. Otherwise, yeah, if you like the theme song to this particular program, you should check out the music of Michael J. O'Connor by going to michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. And otherwise,
before, but it's haunting. It's a haunting tune.
It is, right? It's good. Yeah, it's a good, it's like Oingo Boingo haunting. It's really,
it's got a nice ride to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You want to come back for more. And if you decide to stay for this whole show too, hey, more power to you.
Hey. Yeah. 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 Similar. The show also has a haunting kind of ghostly tone that runs throughout it. That, you know?
Well, that's because I burned down 30 years ago.
Oh, you don't want to go on that podcast.
That podcast is cursed over there.
Oh, God.
Thank you guys again.
Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. We have all had a vague idea about role-playing games this week, and that is a good thing because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye.
The Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy Books at readspaceboy.com.